Michelle.
I'm Maria.
And this is Building Bridges,
a podcast in collaboration with Kings and Brescia to talk about subjects of interest on campus.
I'm in my fourth year at Brescia studying psychology.
And I'm Maria. I'm in my second year and I'm working at the EDID office at Kings. And this is our lovely guest, Siham. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, everyone. My name is Siham Mokasa. I'm a part-time lecturer in the School of Social Work here at Kings.
Yay! And today we have Siham here because we're going to be talking about indigenizing and decolonizing the curriculum. So for our podcast, we usually like to use some guiding questions to keep the conversation flowing smoothly. And we'd like to start with our first question.
Okay, so what does indigenizing or decolonizing the school curriculum mean to you?
I had to think about this, right? Because I think as an earlier career scholar myself and someone who's only been teaching here at King's for 3 years, I'm still learning what this means. For me, I think the first time I realized, I guess I didn't have the word to use when I realized this, that this was what I was doing naturally, is when I was a student here at King's. I did my BSW and my MSW, and I there were so many classes that I really loved, but even within those classes, a lot of the readings I didn't connect with, and a lot of the content, I just felt like I didn't identify with some of the communities that we would talk about often. So I think that's when I first started to realize what decolonizing was, because I was sort of doing it to myself in a way, right? And like unpacking, like, is this the type of knowledge that's true, or is it a different way of knowing and being? And so I'm born in Chicago, I'm North American. So you grow up sort of with a double consciousness of like understanding Western knowledge to be like assuming it to be the right knowledge. And then as someone who I went to like an Islamic school on Sundays, I was exposed to other ways of knowing and being. So I was always like kind of grappling with that. As I came into doing the work with the ARWG, it was a really amazing opportunity to think about the recommendations that came from that report. And part of it was really like trying to decolonize and indigenize curriculum. And that was like sort of in the beginning where I started to teach at King's. So I was like, you know what? I think I really want to do this work. But before I started that work, I realized decolonizing for me as a social work scholar means I have to like examine the explicit racism and white supremacy, coloniality, the hetero and cisnormativity that's already in the profession of social work. So that's kind of where I started to do the work. I'm a true believer before you can decolonize and indigenize, you need to affirm the existence of these structure parts in the first place. So yeah, that was sort of the start of that process for me. I wrote an article with a colleague of mine, actually two articles, where we really talked about the social work profession, the history, and how its ongoing sort of systems and approach to education is often very colorblind and doesn't affirm the whiteness, the racism, the coloniality, the heteronormativity and cisnormativity that exists. So because I love the profession so much, I really wanted to understand where we were and sort of how to move forward. So for me, again, it really starts with unpacking those systems and then beginning to decolonize before you can actually indigenize. You can indigenize and decolonize. I feel like you're doing it constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I feel like all of the time, being a student that's learning about childhood youth studies, being able to see some of like the professors actually change the curriculum to include the perspectives of like decolonizing the curriculum feels so opening, like as a person who's an immigrant, first generation immigrant, like I've been learning my whole life through a different system, and so when I arrived here it was like kind of shocking. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm here at King's and we're trying to make a more inclusive community, it feels so much more refreshing to see professors that are actually willing to put in the work and like be like, yeah, this is what we're learning about, and we're uncovering like a few layers of the amount of like, for example, heteronormativity, like in a lot of classrooms, my professors, and like just the idea that everybody's cisgender and there's no queer people, like a lot of professors taking the first steps to actually like include, say like, oh, these are my pronouns, do you want to share your pronouns, if there are any names that you'd like to me to switch on the when I'm taking lists in the mornings, and so on. And it's, you know, it's really exciting. So our second question is, could you tell us about your approach to opening up or decolonizing your teachings?
Yeah, again, like I said, I'm constantly learning on how to do this better. the first class that I taught was an immigrants, newcomers, and communities transnational social work course. And so, of course, I really wanted to, in that course, include the history of immigration, not only the history, but present day immigration processes in Canada and how it has always been really racist, colonial, and white supremacist. Right? I think that, you know, as I remember driving through the city and seeing signs that say all are welcome, and I'm feeling a little bit icky about that, because although a lot of people believe and true in their heart that all are welcome, it doesn't always manifest that way, right? And so being someone who's involved with some of the Muslim communities, because we have multiple communities here, of course, you're supporting a lot of newcomers, immigrants. And, you know, I would just really hear a lot about the stories of racism and Islamophobia and, you know, even like homophobia, because we have a lot of people coming from those places that are immigrants, they're racialized, and they're, you know, from the 2SLGBTQIA communities. So they're experiencing all of these layered forms of oppression, not just through the system and settlement services. Settlement services here are great, they're wonderful, but there are times where people have to come up against these sorts of oppression. So I was like, I really need to really include some of this reality in teaching, you know, social workers who are going to work with communities that are coming from these backgrounds, so that they really understand that your wellness and your mental health is really tied to your experience with oppression, because there's psychological consequences that come with that. So yeah, it was the first time I designed a course, and you know, it was also coming, a course that Dr. Sethi at the time had designed, and she's a wonderful scholar who was also coming from that community as well. So I've learned a lot from her and others. And it was a pleasure to be able to design a course for the first time, and like remembering what it was like to be a student and really yearning and wanting to see a course where the references were names of Black, Indigenous, racialized, and 2SLGBTQIA scholars. And so, because I was going through my PhD at the time and I had so many wonderful scholars that were coming from those backgrounds who were my supervisors, I was really exposed to so much content that I had never seen before. So that was my first shot at it, and you know, I really tried my best to incorporate all of that knowledge and try to prepare students for what it means to work with people who are coming from that background. I remember saying at the beginning of the first class I ever taught that, you know, if you are not coming from a First Nations community on Turtle Island, you're an immigrant. I don't care. Even if you've been here and you identify as white and you've been here for four generations, you're coming from an immigrant background. So it was really fun to teach that course. I've done it a few times so far, and again, trying my best to always like strengthen the course.
That's so amazing. That's so cool.
Okay, so obviously you do care about the mental well-being of the students and like the people that you teach, and obviously it does impact them in the long run as well. In your view, how does the curriculum or like the stuff you teach about decolonizing or indigenizing the curriculum impact the mental well-being of underrepresented individuals?
I think in so many ways, right? Mm-hmm. I think I want to start with myself. Even when I teach a class, it also impacts me, because it takes a lot of energy. It's something interesting that happens when you are teaching a class about a population that you actually identify with. There's something that's really wonderful about that. It's like speaking truth to power, like every week. But it's also exhausting, and it's also exhausting for students who identify with that particular community. I can see that, right? I think I see that the most after a class, when someone comes up to me and is like moved by something that I've said. Like, I explicitly talk about racism, yeah, white supremacy, and I think maybe for students being that explicit is something that could be challenging and refreshing at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the content is exhausting, it's heavy, it's deep, it's fruitful, it's helpful, but then you have to balance like 3 hours of me talking about a thing and listening to a thing. And then I think as human beings, again, when we identify with a community, I feel like, you know, your nervous system kind of responds. Like, there's been times where I'm lecturing and I'll show them that my hands are shaking, and I'll say that's because I'm actually reading content right now. If I'm talking about Islamophobia or talking about xenophobia, and I'm sharing the experiences of immigrants and newcomers, their experiences are similar to my own. Mm-hmm. or even the people that I love, and even people that are that come to see me in private practice, right? So it's very close, it's very intimate, it's fulfilling, but it's also difficult to manage. So I hope I explained that properly, but it's a whole lot of feelings.
It's really personal.
Yeah.
Like, it hits home.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And I can see that with the folks that are in the classroom. Another thing that I hoped to do, I remember just being a student and being like the only Muslim or like the only Arab in the classroom. And then when we would talk about a topic, sometimes I felt the need to say something or correct something that was said. But then you almost like elect yourself as the representative of all Muslims or a representative of all Arabs. And I really wanted to make sure that, you know, the learners and the students in the classroom didn't feel the burden to do that and that I would do that, right? Like, we're talking about Black communities. I'm not expecting the only Black student to have a comment or say something. It's my responsibility to actually talk about the different communities in Canada, who they are, the things that they experience. So I understood that to be something that was very heavy and burdensome for me as a student, and I try my best to try to take that burden away from students who are coming from those communities. And I hope I've done that, right? But it's still, at the same time, it's difficult to listen to, and it's exhausting at times.
That is something that I feel like, despite being very emotionally exhausting, needs to be seen a little bit more often. So I feel like that is a good transition to my next question to you, is how can other professors integrate decolonizing or maybe Indigenous teachings into their classes?
Yeah, I think it starts with you as a human being. I think that you need to, when you're going into this work, really kind of look at your field of study and say, okay, you know, what has been the foundational knowledge, or what are the seminal articles that are often cited for this one particular field of study, and really looking to see if it really is perpetuating very racist, white supremacist, heteronormative, cisnormative, colonial notions. Are there other ways of knowing and being that I can share with the folks in my classroom? And that's when you can sort of really start the process of decolonizing your curriculum. But there a lot of lectures and a lot of profs are like, we're in this system, right? Even if I do work to decolonize a thing, I'm still in a system where I'm also gonna commit harm, right? I mean, it's difficult to be in a system and to be in a space where this is a sort of a normalized practice. So I think a lot of people are working really hard. I know in social work, so many lecturers and colleagues are working so hard to do this work. And I mean, at King's, like, last 2 years, we've had this really awesome survey where they've asked us to talk about how we are doing decolonizing and indigenizing and including Black, Indigenous, racial, to us, LGBTQIA scholarship in our work, and I think that's a great start.
Are there any pieces of literature you recommend for people who are trying to learn more about decolonizing or, like, teaching in a classroom?
Yeah, I mean, there are two books. There's one particular book that I bought not too long ago called Decolonizing and Indigenizing Education in Canada. And apologies for possibly mispronouncing the author's names, by Sheila Coates Meek and Tama Moki Pickering. That's a great book. Any book that talks about anti-racism or anti-coloniality in education is excellent. And we've got so many amazing scholars that have been doing this work for such a long time, particularly within First Nations communities. Some of the people in social work specifically are Dr. Raven Sinclair, Cindy Blackstock. They've done a lot of amazing work. There are a lot of also Black scholars that are coming from Canada. So Dr. Wanda Bernard-Thomas, David Esty, there was a book that came out called Afrocentric Social Work, such an amazing book. In terms of research, one of my favorites is Decolonizing Methodologies by Linda Tuiwe-Smith. And she talks about being a Maori person who's doing Maori research with Maori people, right? And then the importance of when you're doing research within and with your community. Those are a few authors and those two books that have been really helpful for me in my journey. This continues. And those are the people that I go to the most. And we have a lot of really brilliant scholars here at King's, right? At School of Social Work, we've just recently hired two Indigenous faculty members, and that is so amazing for us. We have a course now on Indigenous communities, which is also phenomenal. There's my colleague Vidya in the writing department, also phenomenal, working really hard towards anti-racist education and decolonizing curriculum. So it's been a pleasure to be connected to these to some of these folks in my own journey.
That's amazing. Yeah. It really, like, as a student I get who wants to be a teacher eventually, I get really excited because it feels like there's a new era of teaching coming for people, and it's so, like, hearing about just everybody that's working together to create this new environment for new students, it's just so exciting. So I also wanted to ask you, what are the courses you teach so that people listening can hopefully?
Yeah, I teach the transnational social work, immigrants, newcomers, and refugees in the first semester. That's the course I taught this year. And then second semester, master's course in community social work specifically.
Yeah. Amazing, okay.
I want to be a teacher in the future as well. Do you have any tips on, like, or wisdom of, like, trying to keep, like, your pride in the culture you have? Because for me, it's very, like, for me, I haven't been to the country I was born in, Philippines, in such a long time, and I feel like connecting with my culture is so difficult on campus, and trying to, like, I don't know, how do I word this? Trying to just, like, keep it with me throughout the years that I go throughout my life, obviously, like, I somehow feel like it'll just, like, disintegrate, or, like, just go away. Do you have any tips on how I could possibly keep that in the future when I'm teaching kids, like, teaching children, teaching students?
You know, so I'm second generation. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Chicago, so my kids are third generation and half fourth generation because my husband's third generation. Anyway, it's interesting. And we have helped to maintain, and by the way, like, I'm half Algerian, I'm Palestinian, and my husband's family's from Lebanon, so there's multiple, but they're Arabs in general, but they're very unique in terms of the difference in culture. There have been so many times in my life where I've had to recalibrate my mind a little bit. And that's because I've realized that my issues were never, like, I can't stay connected to my culture. My issues are I was living within a space that prevented me from being connected to my culture. And that's what it means to be in colonial white supremacist spaces. So it sort of distanced me from wanting, because you immediately internalize this notion that my culture is other and this culture is right. This is wrong and this is sort of right. So there was always this, like, internal, like, I had, like, kind of challenge and fight with myself. And for me, it's been a privilege to be able to travel. It's also been a privilege to be from so many places. I used to think it was a curse, and people were like, where are you from? And I'd be like, gosh, I wish I could only say one place, but now I actually think that it's a privilege. Mm-hmm. It's a really weird place to be. You're, like, in a liminal space. You're, like, in an in-between space between, like, white Western culture and then, like, this other culture, Algeria, Palestine, Lebanon. Sometimes I go there and I'm like, yeah, I'm just like them. And then I'm like, no, I'm a little different. So you realize you're in this in-between space. And there are more of us that are out there, that are in this in-between space. And so the students that I've connected with, and even my own kids, I think it's telling them it's okay to be in this in-between space. You're giving them permission to say there's great things about Canada, about, you know, the United States and being an American or a Canadian that I really like. And there's great things about being, for me, an Algerian, a Palestinian, and, you know, married. I'm an official, like, Lebanese person now. They've adopted me, right? Things about those cultures that I like, and giving myself permission to create something new. Do you know what I mean? So that's the way I've supported my kids. It's okay for you to create this new thing, this new mix of a culture, and be proud of all of those things. It's hard to be proud in certain spaces, I'll be honest with you. I think the reminder to a student or someone else that I get that it's hard for you to, like, for me, it's not easy for me to wear hijab. It's not also easy for me to, like, wear my keffiyeh. I'm Palestinian. I've been wearing my keffiyeh since I was 15. My grandmother gave it to me, right? Like, It's not easy to assert your culture in certain spaces because they're dangerous. So it's supporting the person in doing that and reminding them that they matter and that they belong, right? Because you're constantly feeling like me for myself, like I don't really belong anywhere. But once you start to connect with other people that feel the same way, you realize, actually, no, I do belong because you feel the same way. So maybe we do actually belong together in this really like hodgepodge of different cultures that we've adopted. I don't know, that's a little confusing. I don't have the answer to your question.
It did. Like, yeah. I feel like I should, like, for me, I'm very, like, an introverted person, and I have a hard time connecting with other people because of that, because it's like, oh, I just want to stay home. I just want to be comfy, be comfortable around my own personal space. So it's like, you saying that makes me feel like, oh, I should probably, like, get out there more, mm-hmm. to like get to know more people, to connect with them possibly. But that's pretty much it for me. Do you have any other questions?
To be honest, no, just like the thank you for coming on and like sharing all of these things. For our viewers, this is like something that, you know, like that idea of like reaching out to other people and understanding that there's more of you, like this is it, you know, like reaching out to more people and understanding like, yeah, you're not alone. Nobody's ever alone in anything. And like, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you.
So I'm Annie.
I'm Maria.
I'm Sam.
And this was Building Bridges, and we'll see you on the other side.
Yay!